Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Season 2, Episode 24. A conversation with Joanne Greenbaum, acclaimed artist, painter, sculptor, and teacher based in New York City and Long Island. Joanne Greenbaum does something in her painting that the philosopher Ludger Schwarte calls thinking in color. Hear more about her painting and her thinking in this talk. This episode was recorded on December 17, 2020. Joanne, very nice to talk to you.
Great to see you.
Obviously, we want to talk about your art, about your paintings. But before we start talking about that, I would like to know a little bit more how you grew up and also how and when did it become clear to you that you will be an artist?
When I was 5 years old, I always felt like an artist. Not that I really knew what that meant, but I liked to draw. I liked to paint. My parents were not that encouraging, but I was very stubborn. But I was also, I was a very unhappy, shy girl, just really quiet. I never talked. I never talked in class. I just felt like a total loser. But the only thing I really liked to do was read and draw. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always just pursued that. I did take art lessons. I did, you know, I mean, in those days, I always would, I think from when I was around 12, my parents let me take the train into this New York City. And I took art lessons at Museum of Modern Art. They used to have classes in the basement. And then they would give you a little membership card if you took a class there. And I remember I would go on a Saturday. I'd go by myself. I was like 12, 13. And after the class, I would go up to the museum, which, by the way, was totally, totally empty. Like empty, nobody. And so I would go and I would just stare at all like the Matisse's and the Russian constructivist room. This is the old MoMA. And, you know, I would just study the modernists. And that just sort of became kind of the thing I was interested in the most. And then, but, you know, my family was not overly encouraging. It just wasn't like an artistic household at all. There was no, you know, we didn't have music, let's say. I had to fight against it constantly. And then I went to college. I was an art major. And I think my father still didn't think I should major in art, but I did. And I just felt like I always had to fight for what I wanted to do. And, you know, eventually it won out.
Mm-hmm. So that was definitely your way of expressing yourself if you didn't talk so much or if you were shy. So art was really important for you to express yourself.
Yeah.
And maybe did you take also from the fight, did you take some energy that made you even want it more?
Definitely, because I think that I was really an angry child, like really, really angry. And I think the anger, and this is also, I have to say, carried into my adult life as well. The you use like somehow the anger, like instead of, I guess, letting it defeat you, it always charged me up. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I was angry, I think I always had the, like, I'm going to show them attitude. You know, I'm so angry that it always just charged me up. And it made me want to just go to do more.
So it was actually a positive energy for you.
Kind of. I mean, it didn't feel positive at the time. I think now when I get angry about something, I just get to work.
Yeah.
You know, I just get to work. And that's what it does. But I think when you're growing up and you're a kid and you're angry, it doesn't feel very good. Especially if you don't have anyone to express. I mean, I think one of the problems was that I was afraid to express my anger, especially to my parents, let's say, because I was afraid what would happen.
Mm-hmm. You said that you went to the classes at MoMA and you looked at all the classical modernists and all of that, and this must have left an impression. Did you have a role model or some like artist heroes that had, at least at the beginning, an influence on your work?
Yeah, I definitely think that, I mean, I was thinking about this the other day when I was thinking, you know, we were going to do this podcast, and I kept thinking about someone like Sonia Delaunay, who's sort of like, you see the pictures of her and she's sort of this kindly old lady, but she's like in her studio and she did clothing, she did books, she did poetry, she did cars, she did industrial design, and she made paintings. And, you know, I'm not even talking about her husband even. I think she was a much better artist than Robert Delaunay. But I remember someone like Sonia Delaunay always felt like, you know, a role model in a way. I mean, in terms of her art. But I also think, I mean, as corny as it sounds, I think Matisse was always a huge, huge influence. Matisse with color, of course, always just, I think I internalized Matisse's color. So, you know, when I got to college and after, I never felt afraid of using color because I think I grew up looking at Matisse.
That's interesting, because why did you then choose the way of being an abstract painter?
Well, I think that was gradual. When I was in college, I was not an abstract painter. I was really interested in still life, and that came out in a way that was more pop art. In college, I was really into, like, what's his name, Tom Wesselman, and like all the pop artists that painted objects, I was really interested in. So then I remember I was doing paintings with objects on a table, kind of tilted up, you know, in kind of like a Fauvist kind of way, you know, like objects on a table, kind of a pop art way. I would paint matchbooks and things like that and common objects. And then what happened is, and then after I graduated college and set up my first studio, I think that, I don't know what happened, but I just basically got rid of the objects and just started painting the table, which ended up just being a square.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I remember that development, it's like, well, I don't need these objects. I'm really more interested in the structure of the table or the square. And that's how I kind of started all over again. But, you know, it didn't feel like a huge departure in a way. It felt natural to just, in a sense, get rid of the objects.
So it was like an organic development.
I think it was organic, and also just sort of the time between, you know, you graduate from school and then you set up your new studio, you want to start fresh in a way. So I felt free to be able to start fresh, you know, and I don't think I was at the point, I don't think I was so aware of, let's say, an art world that favored one thing over the other. I think it was just in my world of my studio, that's kind of just what happened.
And is then painting something very personal for you, or does it transcend that?
I think painting is very personal for me, but I think at this point it also transcends. I think it's both. I think the activity of painting is very personal, but it's also very, it's comforting. Like I know paint really well. Like the tools of being a painter, paint and turpentine and brushes and, you know, all the things that we use are very comforting to me. Mm. I'm very comfortable with them. It's like the life of an artist or the life of the painter. It feels so natural to me. I know people that feel the opposite. Like they'll say, oh, you know, when I get a fresh canvas or a fresh piece of paper, I'm afraid to work on it, let's say, or I'm afraid to ruin it. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember a student once told me that, and I was like, well, it's just paper. You know, I mean, it's to be used.
And how is that for you? I mean, how do you start a new painting? Do you have a plan, or is it just like an intuitive action, or is it a mix of both?
I think it's a mix. I usually don't have a plan at all. In fact, right now I'm in my studio and I'm staring at three brand new blank canvases, and I have no idea what I'm going to do. I mean, sometimes it's as simple as that I got some new supplies, like I got some new colors, and I might be like, well, I'm going to try out these new colors. Sometimes it's as simple as that. Just say, oh, look, here's a new color. I haven't used this in a while, or this is a new paint or a new brand. I mean, I guess I don't have anxiety about how something is started, because just because you start a painting in a certain way doesn't mean it's going to end up that way. And, you know, and if it's all a big mistake, I use that mistake. I mean, I like when I start something and it doesn't work out, because then that's a huge challenge for me to somehow make that work. You know, it's like solving a puzzle in a way. It's like, oh, this is so bad. What can I do to either make it even worse or to make it better? And, you know, sometimes maybe I'll turn the thing upside down. But the thing is that the way that I work is that I very rarely cover up my mistakes with paint on top of it, or I don't cover up the mistake. I don't blot it out with more paint. I don't scrape it off. I don't really work like that. It's the way that I work. It's more accumulative. So, you know, if I start something and it just looks awkward and bad, mostly I'll just stop and do something else and then go back to it later on. And I guess what I'm saying is that no matter how I start a painting, I'm not really afraid. Mm-hmm. I kind of go into each work as fearless in a way.
That's interesting, because I remember you once told me that you're not interested in being a so-called good painter or master painter, and that you just even cultivate like more a beginner's attitude or a playfulness. And how do you avoid of being more masterly? I mean, this is also, if you paint for so many decades, it's almost a skill to not become a master of certain things.
I mean, I have been painting for so long that I feel that, at least for myself, that because I know paint really well and I know what it can do, and I do know how to render, and I do know how to blend colors, and I do know how to make pretty much any color that you put in front of me, like I feel like I can give that up, and that the point of making a painting isn't to prove your skill. So you have to kind of rise above whatever skill you have. And I mean, it doesn't mean the skill's not there and you use your skill, but you use your skill in other ways. So I think for me, it's when I start a new work, I like the idea in my head of just throwing out everything that I know and trying to feel like I'm just starting from scratch and that I don't know anything, so that I'm not going to rely on that skill that I supposedly have.
And you don't show off the skill. It's not about showing off the skill.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, sometimes you see people's work in the gallery and it's all about their skill, you know, and how they're proving to you on so many levels how smart they are or how skilled they are with the brush. And I think that obscures the painting for me. So I like to just throw that stuff out the window and kind of approach each work as just in a more pure kind of way, if that's possible. I mean, I think it is possible. I mean, I do feel like I do know how to paint and people could see that I know how to paint. I'm not de-skilling to prove a point.
I completely understand. If you talk about pureness, or if you talk about that, you know, you're not showing off your skill and still you're sort of like an accomplished painter and do it for so long. So what is it about for you? If you say it's not about skill, it's about what is like the meaning of painting for you?
I think it's the way that I just express, it's just my communication with the world. This painting is just the part of myself that I'm showing to the world, because I feel like, I mean, my life is kind of, all my life is the studio pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm showing the world about who I am and what I'm interested in is in my paintings. And I think somebody said to me once, they said, you're like, they go, oh, well, you know, you're not even capable of making a bad painting. And I was sort of embarrassed by that, but I don't know what that means. You know, like, I don't set out to make a great painting, and I don't think everything I make is great.
But do you even make a distinction?
No, I don't even make a distinction. It's just, this is what came out and this is what came out. I mean, I think I am interested in some sort of beauty that I see in paint and color and shape and form and structure. I mean, there is beauty. Sometimes there's balance. Sometimes there's imbalance. Sometimes there's just, it is just what it is.
This probably goes very far, that question, but is it even slightly something, probably I wouldn't say spiritual, but sort of like essential, something in there of your essential being?
Yeah, definitely. And and it's like my being, but it's also my way of, this is my brain today.
Oh,
this is my brain. This is what my brain is doing today. In a way, you could say the paintings are about just what you're allowing your brain to do.
Like neuronal activity.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I mean, in a certain way. Yeah, I mean, I don't think, it's not like they're brain waves. I mean, I've said this before in other interviews that I get bored really easily by doing the same thing. So it's like, if I feel like I'm repeating myself, it's like, if I feel like, oh, I've been here before, this feels really familiar in terms of like a color combination or a structure, or if I'm just kind of going through the motions, I stop. Because I like to challenge myself when I make a painting. It has to somehow challenge me. And sometimes the challenge is to just put the brush down and leave it alone. So I think that whereas when I was younger, I was much faster. And I think in my now older years, the slowing down is really, really amazing, because you can slow it down so that you just have time to think. I'm not acting out every, oh, sorry, that's the dog. Anyway, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I need to move in a new direction, and that slowing down, I think thinking and looking have become so much more important than acting out.
Oh, okay.
You know, so things are just slower now, which I, in painting especially, which I love that. Because I feel like you have so much, there's so much time in a day. I mean, I'm lucky enough to be able to work full time right now. And it's such a privilege not to teach or have to go to a job. And it's such a gift and such a privilege that I kind of just am just in those moments now where it's slow and I savor it and I kind of happy in that area.
Mm-hmm. So this kind of new wisdom, this also flows obviously into your painting. Do you think they have changed to this slower pace?
I think so. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think the construction of the painting, it's instead of maybe like 10 sessions with the painting, maybe there's 100 sessions with the painting, meaning that I might go out at night and then come back and see one thing I want to do to that painting, just one little thing. And I might just do that and then just leave it. And then the next day do another little thing. And so it becomes this sort of living being that somehow, in a way, at some point, tells me when it doesn't need anything else.
Well, that's what I sense, that you talk about them almost like living beings.
Well, they kind of are. I mean, I feel like, not that it's a living being, but that it's just such a representation of sort of me, and that when you're in the painting, when a painting is going in the studio, and I actually do work usually on at least two things at the same time in different times of completion. So, you know, as I'm finishing one, I might be starting another one, or there might be one halfway done and one just started. And so sometimes even I'll just take whatever extra paint is on the brush or on in the cup, and I might just work on one and then just take that extra stuff and just start painting it on the other one.
Actually, you spend your life in the studio mostly. So how does a normal day for you look like?
Well, I recently bought a house in the country of New York, Long Island, which is 2-hour drive from New York City. And I kind of, especially during the pandemic, I'm just here a lot more than in New York City. So like last March when the pandemic started, I came out and I basically stayed, didn't come back to the city till at some point in the summer. So now I'm kind of back and forth every week, but I've been spending less and less time in my studio in New York City. So here in the country, it's just different. You know, I have a car here. So in the morning, I might go out and buy groceries, do errands, go to the hardware store. So my house out here, it has a garage that I'm going to convert to a studio. But in the summer, I use the garage as a clay studio. So I set up a whole ceramic studio in the garage. So I would go out there. I mean, there's no heat or light, so I could only work there in the summer, and hopefully eventually I'll have it winterized and put electricity in there and everything. But right now I'm painting in the house. So I made my house, which is an old farmhouse. I basically have every room in the house except for my bedroom and the room where I have the TV and the kitchen. It's just all studio. I'm working throughout the whole house. And it's really fun because it's a house. It's not a loft. It's not one big room. There's different rooms. And it's just really interesting to work in a place that's not a New York City style or a Berlin style artist studio. It's just an old house. Mm-hmm. But the light out here is really, really beautiful. You've been to Long Island, and it's just, yes. You know, it's just magical, beautiful light. So I just kind of go about my day. I work, I stop, I work, I watch the news, I make lunch. Because I live here as well, it's kind of just being home. And I have to say, in New York City, it's pretty much the same, because I also live and work in the same place. I've always done that. I've never had like a studio that I had to commute to.
Yeah, because life and art are not separated in your life.
They're all the same. So even when I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm staring at one of my paintings. When I watch something on TV, I have drawing materials in there. So like I pick up my pen and I start drawing as I'm watching a movie. So yeah, it's just it's all together. It's all one piece, really.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, because you just mentioned that you change your garage in the summer into a ceramic studio. Is this interest in the ceramics and these objects, is that any different as in the painting, why you chose that material? Or is it a really different way of approaching things? Or do you express the same thing like in the painting, just in another material?
It has a different feel for me. I think when I started to make sculpture, which was now like a while ago, I think I started in 2003 to make sculpture. And I started, you know, very small with like kids materials, because I just had no training in sculpture whatsoever. And then I took a class. So those materials just were kind of like very flimsy. Then I just took a class. I took a clay hand building class at a local school in New York City. It wasn't something that was planned. This was a little bit before a lot of people were using clay. I was just kind of very tentatively, it felt to me like, because I'm a big drawer, it felt to me that I'm not making sculpture, but that I'm drawing in three dimensions. That's kind of how it felt to me. And it still feels like that. Like, especially the white porcelain that I'm using, which is just very nice. And it's very easy to build with it. I find it very meditative to work with clay. So it's almost like the way that I draw with ballpoint pen. Like, I don't really think about it. I just scribble with pen. I just take clay and kind of whatever happens, happens. But I think over the years, I have become a little bit more skilled, so I can make things a little larger. They're not going to blow up in the kiln. I'm more comfortable with using the materials, so I've gotten a little bit more ambitious, but I absolutely do not have any interest in making monumental sculpture. I mean, I think it's so funny now that I'm talking about that, and we were talking earlier about this idea of when I was a student of painting objects on a table. Like, now I'm making the objects. I mean, that's kind of what it feels like, because so I also started to make functional objects as well. And this is something that I do, you know, sometimes you just have anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that if I just go and start working, just start making a pot or a planter or a candlestick, it just makes me feel really good and better. So I've kind of started this new thing where if I'm making a sculpture and then I have extra clay, I start just making a pinch pot or a bowl. And so I have this other whole thing that I'm doing now where I'm making functional objects. It's not like I'm going to make a line of housewares or anything. I make them for myself. I'm making them for my own succulent plant collection. And then I also just give them away as gifts. But I mean, I think that I love making them and giving them away as gifts. I just bring them something that I made. And I don't know, it's just, it feels really good to do that. But as I said earlier, the sculpture, it's most of the sculpture I hand color myself. So like I share a kiln with a friend. And then what I usually do is especially with the porcelain, I don't always glaze them. I bring them back after they've been high fired and I draw on them with marker or paint or ink. So when I get the white sculpture back, then it is sometimes like a painting, because then I have this white surface to start. Then I kind of do approach it like a painting.
Mm-hmm. With the color. What I really wonder is, it's very obvious you spend your life in a house, which is a studio. Your whole life is really about your art. And you say also it shows so much of your brain's activity in the painting and then also probably in the ceramics. I wonder what you wish from the people that look at your work, your audience, what you wish of them, how to react to your work, what should they get out of your work? What is like, because this is your form of communication. So what do you communicate and what do you want to get back from them?
I think I want people to obviously look at the painting. And I mean, I think that I want people to enjoy the painting. And maybe to feel challenged, like, what is she doing? Or what is this about? Or sometimes it's just pleasing to look at. Like, I remember a while ago, I forget the year it was, but I remember I was showing at a gallery in Chelsea, and I remember the director there, or we were talking, and I remember saying something, and this was when everyone was talking about what's the content of your work. And she said to me, there's no content in your work. That really bothered me because it was so untrue. Yes, maybe there's not blatant political content in my work. I got really annoyed. So what I started to do, I remember, and you probably remember some of these paintings from when I had the show at Mönchengladbach, is that I started literally almost as a joke, but also because I was so mad, I started numbering the areas in the painting as I was making them to sort of say to this woman, you know, look, here's my content. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like this is my, I hate the word journey, but this is my journey in making this painting. And I'm spelling it out for you so you can see that this is how this painting is constructed. And then after I started working with numbers and putting numbers in my painting, I realized that not only was I spelling out for you what the content was, I was also showing you the process of which I construct a painting, and that it's not mindless and there is content there. So as a result of putting all these numbers in the painting, people started looking at my paintings, trying to figure out, like, what do these numbers mean? Or, you know, and so I noticed that people were looking at my paintings for longer periods of time.
I think this is where we're really coming to the nitty-gritty, because it is so hard to verbalize your work. And I think this is sometimes making people uncomfortable, because you cannot say, so what it's about? What is it about? Tell me the story. What is it about? And it is about something, you know, but we don't have the language for that.
Because I think my work is not, what is that, the right word? It's not I don't know. I'm not going to say pre-language, post-language. My work is nonverbal.
It's nonverbal. It's deeper than language. It can be deeper than language.
I don't think we have a language to express sometimes certain things in art. I mean, I think people try. I think a really good writer could probably try, but I certainly can't verbalize what I do, because there's no language for it. It's just something I do, you know? It's just something that comes from me that has nothing to do with language, you know? And that's also why I don't title my paintings, because when you title something, people read that title. So like I could make a painting today. It's snowing right now in Long Island. It's beautiful, by the way. Beautiful snow, everything. So I could title my painting, Snowy Day. You know, no, I'm not going to do that. I like to keep the mystery. And also it just, nothing kind of does it justice. So I feel like, just enjoy it. Look at it.
I think it is really a challenge in a world which is built up on concepts, which is built up on language, and which, where we are in a time where it is even asked of art to be political, to be feminist, to be anything. And I know, you know, I know for sure that you are a political person and that you are also a feminist. And so through the back door, does that have a place in your work as well, even if you don't spell it out?
Yes, because first of all, I'm doing it. I mean, I've survived. I'm doing it. I'm making paintings, even coming through. I mean, it's still not easy for women. It's still not easy for old, I'm in my 60s. You're kind of invisible until you're maybe, you know, 85 now.
Yes, that's what I always say. Endure, Joanne.
You know, people go, just stay healthy for another 20 years. That makes me so mad, because it's like, why is that sexy to the art world when you're like almost dead? You know, I've been called a mid-career artist now for over 20 years. So I just think in terms of all of that in my work, it's like I'm doing it and I'm sticking in there. I'm not giving up. So no matter how hard things sometimes get, I'm doing what I want to do, you know?
Yeah, which is freedom, actually.
A lot of freedom. And I have to say, I do have a fuck you attitude, because I have to have a fuck you attitude, or else I wouldn't survive, I don't think. And also, I think that there is some sort of feminist content. I'm not embarrassed. Like, I remember when I was really young, I remember somebody, I don't know who it was or where it was and what context, but somebody said, oh, you know, your paintings don't look like they were painted by a woman. And that was supposed to be like a huge compliment.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was so young and naive, I took that as a compliment, you know, oh good, I paint like a guy. That means I'm serious. That means I'm not painting girly girl paintings, you know, whatever that means.
But actually it was an insult.
Right. But I think that there are things that I do in my paintings that maybe men wouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what that is. I just think I'm willing to be very vulnerable and show that in my work. And maybe a lot of men are afraid to show that part. I don't know. I think that's stereotyping, and I'm very wary of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I'm not posing. There's no machismo in my work.
Mm-hmm. So it's like we see the full Joanne Greenbaum. This is what we get in your painting.
Mm-hmm. I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What would you wish for? Yeah, probably the next year.
The next year, I mean, who knows, you know, what's going to happen. But right now I don't have like a one person show scheduled. So I just keep going, you know, hopefully I'll be able to continue just doing what I'm doing. I don't know what's going to happen. We're getting a new president in a couple weeks. So that's exciting. Everything is so crazy right now. They said New York may go into another lockdown the way you are now. So I'm planning to just kind of live my life as I've been doing, very reclusive, very alone, driving back and forth from New York and just making my work. You can't really plan anything. I'd love to travel to Germany. I'd love to, you know, go to Los Angeles, but you can't, I mean, travel is now out of the question. So I'm just here.
It draws us quite all of us, quite back to ourselves. And that might be hard, but it might be also good. It might be also an opportunity.
The first month or two when last winter, when we were in lockdown, and at first there was like a grief, you know, I remember like kind of just almost crying. Like I remember making stuff out of clay and just kind of like weeping. There was like grief that this is actually happening in the world. And then it just gave way to this, it's like, wow, I don't have to be anywhere. I don't have to do anything. All that stuff that we have to do in the art world, like go to openings and go to the, you know, the occasional dinner or this, like all of that just got wiped out. And all you had was yourself in the studio. And there was something so great about that. I think the slowing down has just been really nice, I think, for myself and other people that I know.
Yes. Yes, we're heading again in a slow period. So thank you so much, Joanne. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. This was really good. I enjoyed talking, and I don't think I've talked this much in months.
For more Voices on Art, go to van-horn.net and follow us on Instagram at Voices on Art and at Van Horn Düsseldorf.
Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.